Welcome to Insight Mind Body Talk, a body-based mental health podcast. We're your hosts, Jessica Warbler-Schultz
and Jeannie Kolker.
Whether you've tried everything to feel better and something is still missing,
or you've already discovered the wisdom of the body,
this podcast will encourage and support you in healing old wounds, strengthening relationships, and developing your inner potential.
All by accessing the mind-body connection.
Please know, while we're excited to share and grow together, this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for mental health treatment. It doesn't replace the one-on-one relationship you have with a qualified healthcare professional and is not considered psychotherapy.
Thanks, Jess, and thank you for listening. Now let's begin a conversation about what happens when we take an integrative approach to improving our well-being.
Welcome to Insight Mind Body Talk. My name is Jess. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, trauma-informed fitness expert, and your host. Today's episode is called Happiness and Flow, and I am here with Ms. Jeannie Kolker, owner of Insight Counseling and Wellness, registered yoga teacher, licensed professional counselor, and today we are going to get into the nitty-gritty of positive psychology. Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
Hi, Jess. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. I think this is a super fun topic to talk about, especially like, you know, in the middle of winter when we're recording this, when days are really short, yeah. Kind of have to work a little bit harder to feel any sort of positive emotions.
Agree.
Some people like this. Some people like winter. I'm not one of them. I am solar powered. I like to see the sun and feel warmth on my skin. So I got to work a little harder in winter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me too. I do like the quiet morning. I like to sit and watch this. I'll get up, you know, it's still dark, and I'll sit with my cats and I'll read while they watch the birds as the sun rises. And that 15 minutes is the best part of winter for me.
Yeah.
It's over. Right. And then I'm sad. And I have to remind myself as I'm driving home, it's only 5:30. It's dark. Don't let this trick you. It's only 5:30. What would you feel like if it was summer in 5:30? And I try to call upon that energy because nothing's changed except for, you know,
yeah,
there's no sun.
Right. But you're using some cognitive tools. Yes. To feel some happiness. That's basically the theme of our program today.
Yeah. Well, you talk a lot as a teacher, as a yoga teacher, about positive psychology. So why don't you kind of get us started? You know, what is it? Where did it come from? What's the gist? What's the juice?
Absolutely. Well, when you think about positive psychology, I think it kind of has some, unfortunately, cliche connotations. I think people think, oh, it's just the power of positive thinking. That's not going to work for me, right? It's kind of like a hippy-dippy woo-woo. Well, you know, good for you, but I'm depressed. That's not going to help me.
Yeah.
And I think that's a misperception. I mean, positive psychology has really made a lot of strides in the last few decades. And, you know, it's not a new concept. It's something that we've been talking about, you know, since the middle of the last century. Like, think about Maslow. We talk about Maslow, right? And his hierarchy of needs, you know, like how we have to have our basic needs met until we can, you know, experience our potential and truly grow. Sure. And, you know, and that's kind of what this is based in. And, you know, positive psychology is really more about less of a focus on our, you know, our symptoms. And, you know, like as therapists, you and I, you know, because of the medical model and the way that we have to justify our existence to insurance companies, we have to set goals for people that's like, you know, lessening my depression. So if I'm at a negative 10 today, can I get up to zero? Can I have a baseline of just like normal human being?
Yeah. And we focus a lot on, you know, the problems and the symptoms and treating those symptoms and sometimes a little, you know, at least through the medical model, I feel like it's a little less focused on the human and human potential and more about how to resolve these issues that someone has.
Right. We talk about what's wrong, but rarely do we talk about what's right. And, you know, I think it's getting better. I think we're doing a better job with strengths and really helping people play to their strengths. And that's really kind of the crux of what we're going to talk about today is using our strengths to, instead of maybe get our baseline to zero, you know, to get that baseline up a little bit higher so that we can actually experience positive emotions like joy, gratitude, mm-hmm. life satisfaction. You know, Maslow would call it self-actualization, right? Whatever you call it, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. Awesome.
So some of the folks that are credited with really making this more of a movement, Martin Seligman and Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. These are two.
Sorry, viewers or listeners can't see my face go, what? Who are those people? Because I actually have not heard of either of them.
Really? Okay. Well, so these are two really important names in the field of positive psychology because they're basically the founding fathers. And Martin Seligman was the president of the APA in the 90s, you know, the American Psychological Association, which is who puts together our diagnostic manual for all the things that are wrong with us, our mental disorders, right? And it's interesting to think that, you know, he was in charge of this group and he was really
the person who doesn't want to focus on symptoms is actually one of the people in charge of categorizing and organizing all the symptoms.
Yeah. Think about how pioneering that is. He didn't just go down that road. You know, he really talked about how can we, as, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, work not only toward, you know, relieving our suffering, but explore like what makes life more enjoyable. How do we focus from a focus on pathology to more flourishing, you know, as individuals? And then of course we know the ripple effect. If we're flourishing as an individual, that spreads, and then we flourish more as a society. So, you know, he really was the founder of this, and pretty kind of out of the box thinking. Really.
Yeah.
And now that's why I'm saying it's not just like, you know, pop psychology, just, you know, think your way to a better life. It's based in science, and it is, you know, truly an emerging field that I think has pretty huge implications because we all want to be happy. I don't want to just be free from suffering. I'd love to be free from suffering, but I'd also like to have moments of true joy too.
Sure. No, totally. It makes a lot of sense because it's not just positive vibes only, which a lot of people think is, you know, positive psychology. They, you know, no feelings, no emotions allowed, right? No, you're not allowed to be human. You just have to always have that toxic positivity. But what you're saying is that it's much more about how do we go from baseline neutral to actually feeling as though we're in tune with ourselves, in tune with life, having those glimmers as well as those low points. So it's just kind of helping us flourish versus just kind of be there.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. It is something to remember on these dark days when it's dark at 5 p.m. and you know, it is a challenge to really get ourselves going, but that's where we can really start to appreciate. Here's where gratitude comes in. When we, in order for the good in our lives to appreciate, we have to appreciate the good in our lives. So here's where gratitude can come in. What do you think about when you're thinking, oh, it's 5:30. Okay. Is there anything that you're grateful for in that darkness?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, like I mentioned at the start, I try to even think about, you know, the potential still at 5:30, you know, because my brain can be like, oh, it's 5:30. It's so dark. Like, this is the end of my day. What did I do for me? I didn't have any me time or any balance. And, you know, trying to shift that thought and look for, yes, what am I grateful for that happened today? But what am I grateful for still to come, like that I could cultivate this evening? You know, there's a lot of potential still here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we know that our energy flows where our attention goes. So if we're spending more time thinking about all the good stuff and all the possibilities for that evening, then we're going to have more of those positive emotions around it. You know, it still is a lot of a cognitive restructuring. You know, it it is positive thinking, of course, but we also can recognize that, you know, negative emotions are a part of life. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes we can make a decision to focus more on positive. And of course, that's oversimplified. You know, all our listeners know that we talk about trauma a lot and how that changes our brain structures, the, you know, the systems in our bodies. And we can't really outthink our trauma, but we can wire, we can wire ourselves a little bit more toward the positive with work. Unfortunately, it does take work.
No, it does. And I mean, it's part of neuroscience, right? You know, so if we slow down and we're mindful in like that gratitude, right? And we really feel that gratitude and we truly experience it, and then we work to continue to look for it, we're building those neural pathways that are looking and being in the gratitude. It's you know, it's the same way that, you know, for negative thinking at times, like if we stay in that and we don't disrupt it, those pathways do get really strong. And of course, we all have negative thinking, not to say that you're wrong to have it, but part of it is disrupting those thought patterns and trying to retrain the brain to be looking for that gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you and I both know that mindfulness is a huge part of this.
Yes. Right?
So like a meditative practice can be really beneficial. Science, there's so much science out there to support that meditation can rewire our brains. We can wire them to be more positive. But you and I are both really invested in healing through the body. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can talk at length about how yoga can increase our sense of joy and life satisfaction, and that we can really work toward more of a just a positive outlook on our yoga mats. You could probably say the same thing for weightlifting.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's so many parts to break down in movement when you're lifting weights. But, you know, for me, it's the mindfulness that you have to be so present in your body to be safe, right? Because you're possibly lifting some pretty heavy stuff. And yet there's also, you enter a type of flow where you're so challenged and you are so enjoying it, hopefully so much, that, you know, you tap into different parts of yourself that maybe aren't present when you're just in your prefrontal cortex or in your brain all day, right? There's just a different element. I mean, there are so many times when I am moving my body that I feel like my true self tells me what is happening next in my life and in my world. And then I make choices based out of those feelings, not based out of the parts that have fear. And maybe you're kind of laughing like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. But it's so true. Like that, I feel like I'm so tapped in and like my most purest self comes out. And there's been times when I'm lifting, which is how I started my entire career, right? Which I've told on previous podcast episodes, that there's a part of me I only access after I have deadlifted 85 pounds five times, you know, three sets, and I'm wiped. And yet there's a part of my heart and in my soul that comes so alive where I think of new ideas or I think of things and I'm like, yes, I will follow that. Or in your yoga class a couple of weeks ago, well, more than a couple of weeks ago now, when I said, like, I felt tapped in, and then my everything told me like where my path was supposed to move next. And I was like, yep, like totally trust that. And to be a person who movement wasn't safe, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, and had a lot of, you know, we talk about trauma, like shallow breathing, tension in my body, and inability to really be playful, you know, hardly ever. And in the ways that trauma changed my nervous system and closed my window of tolerance, you know, movement is in so many ways the path that has expanded my window of tolerance and helped me feel safer and kind of cultivated, you know, my best self.
Mm-hmm. So not only are you healing things mm-hmm. from the past, and that you're also able to, like I said, move beyond that, like just baseline of zero, and like find joy and be happy. Like there's, you know, physiological processes. There's some endorphins that are playing a role here.
Sure.
when you're feeling
I'll
that sense
it.
Of, exactly. But it's also getting that mind out of the way. And that's really what flow is. And flow is a concept of positive psychology. And here's that second name that I mentioned, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. Mm-hmm. He wrote the book on flow. He started studying this in...
Oh, I know this person. Yes, I just didn't know their name.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And it's very fun to spell and pronounce. but he wrote the book on flow. And it came out in the 90s. And it's really all about, you know, we might call it being in the zone, mm-hmm. Kind of finding that activity where we lose track of time, we're totally absorbed in the moment, and we're engaged, and we're really living kind of in an optimal state. And that's really what flow is. And it's kind of like what you're describing when you're lifting. You're totally in your body. Mm-hmm. Your mind is not engaged, but then you find insight, like things come to you because you're in a state of flow.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I saw him do a TikTok or TikTok. No, it's not called TikTok. It's called a TED Talk.
Yes.
Back in the day, a TED Talk, which are now on TikTok, I'm sure. But I saw him do a TED Talk where he, you know, kind of did the graph of, you know, we can be highly challenged but bored. We can be bored and unchallenged. We can be highly challenged and really not enjoying it per se, or, mm-hmm. you know, and then we can be highly, I'm not explaining this correctly. What's the other
one? Let me take a stab at it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Because okay. Lord Almighty, I'm going to listen to this podcast later and go, lady, what the F?
You were not in a flow state when you were trying to describe that.
I was in a thinky state, which wasn't coming together. Okay, take it away, Jeannie.
Okay, so you're imagining a graph, right? So we have the x-axis, which is the one that is horizontal. So it's left and right, right? So the x-axis, that's our skill level. That's our skills.
Okay.
And if we think about the y-axis, that's the one that's vertical, that's up and down. That's the level of challenge.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So if you imagine that graph at the very, you know, at the bottom, if we have a low skill set and low challenge, that's just meh, right? That's like, I like to think about like washing the dishes. You know, I think we're all pretty skilled at washing the dishes because it doesn't take a lot of skills. And it also doesn't take a lot of challenge. It's just, it is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. We get the dishes clean and it's kind of an apathetic moment. It can also be very meditative, very mindful. You know, I'm not saying it couldn't be. But then as you move along that skill levels, as we get more and more challenging, and he studied musicians, athletes, people who really... are doing an activity not for a goal.
Okay.
So it's more just like a musician who's practicing and just feels that real sense of joy when they are highly skilled at that. And if it's a really easy piece of music, well, that maybe is like relaxing. You know, it could be relaxing. It could also be kind of boring. But as that challenge, as that y-axis, as we go up that y-axis and the challenge increases, if we're not very skilled as a musician and we're trying to play a really hard piece on our cello, you're going to get anxious, angry, frustrated. You're going to have some negative emotions, right? But if you're a very skilled musician and you're playing a piece that is challenging, but within your skill set, that's when you find flow. Mm. That's where you reach that state of flow. So something with high level of challenge, but also when you're skilled at that, you can enter that state of flow. And maybe that's, you know, weightlifting can be that for you.
Sure.
That's something that you've practiced. For me, it's yoga. I really feel a sense of flow when I'm teaching yoga because that feels like a challenge. It's not easy, but it's something that's within my skill set. Writing for me, I get in a real state of flow because I was blessed and privileged to have, you know, lots of support and education as a child and in college to be able to write well. I always knew that was something that I was good at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, writing an email to you isn't all that challenging. So I'm not necessarily in a state of flow, Jess. It's fun. And I like to make you laugh. but if I were to say, sit down and, you know, write a class that's really meaningful to me, or to write a personal essay, or to write in my journal, that's where I start to lose track of time. And, you know, you even start to kind of like ignore your body cues. I mean, have you ever been in a state of flow where all of a sudden you're like, ooh, my bladder has been talking to me for a while.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Or even lately, it's been jigsaw puzzles for me. Like, that's how I deal with the darkness of winter, is I work jigsaw puzzles. And if I've got like one that's super fun, but really challenging, like 1,000 piece, that's doable.
Yep.
Then I get in that state of flow. But if I, my sister and brother-in-law had one over Christmas that was impossible. It was basically just a hunter dressed in white in a white field, and all the pieces were the same, exact same shape and size. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and I thought, I can do this. I can totally do it. No, I got mad. I got mad and I put it away.
Yeah.
So, you know, even a jigsaw puzzle, you can find a sense of flow. Where do you feel flow?
Let's see. I think journaling is a big one where I'm like, you know what? I'm sitting down to force myself to write these 2 pages, and suddenly it's like my hands cramping. It's 10, 12 pages later, for sure. I can find flow. Sometimes I'll find it coloring. I can't stop. Or, I would say like organizing. I love to organize. But really for me, I think, like movement, but this podcast, you know, I could spend hours editing, and the podcast led me to this thing called Canva, if y'all don't know it. And I enter flow in Canva. I could make like ad after ad with copy after copy after copy. And mm-hmm. I would just, it's creating things lead into flow for me, where it's like, what new thing can I think of? How can I make it look? What kind of copy can I write? You know, all those kinds of parts kind of come online. And theater was always a huge flow for me, mm-hmm. like community theater. I studied theater in college. Mm-hmm. Public speaking, oh my gosh, like right. writing that, you know, presentation and then giving it, total flow. You know, well, and think therapy, about, right? And being a therapist. Like,
good.
Right? I mean, So what I took away from the TED Talk I watched was that, you know, I'll never forget it, because I saw it, I think, even maybe before I was a therapist or just starting out, that the more time someone spends in flow, the higher their life satisfaction is. And that is how like personal flow is. So finding your flow leads to a higher life satisfaction. And I would go to the gym and I'd train my clients. Hours gone in 3 seconds. You know, when therapy, when the work is happening, done in 3 seconds. And when a client says, oh my gosh, we just started. Oh, we're both in flow, right? It's not every session. It's not every workout, but I try to put a lot of flow in my life because mm-hmm. I think it brings a lot of meaning.
Oh, that's exactly it. That's the point of this. You know, positive psychology is about being in that place where you are experiencing flow, joy, meaning, and having glimpses of that, hopefully on the daily. That's what helps us to really live that optimal life. And of course, you know, we don't all get that privilege. You know, unfortunately, we don't all get to, you know, go and access higher education and the things that you and I have done. No. But there are, you know, there, everybody can find a state of flow in something. Mm-hmm. And when we are able to engage in that more and more often, like I was even reading some study about video games and flow and how that's.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. It's not my thing. But I know a lot of people.
Not my thing either, but I'm like laughing because my husband and I pulled out my 1985, no joke, y'all, Nintendo over the holiday break. For something like fun to do. And, you know, I'm not in flow doing it, but his inner child is like his 12-year-old self, his 10-year-old self is so excited and in flow. And then I come home the other day and I'm pulling in our driveway and I can see the TV through the windows. And there is like 16-bit NBA Jam across our living room television, which is a Super Nintendo, if y'all didn't know. So my husband sought out this Super Nintendo, brought it home, and he's playing his all-time favorite game he's ever played. And so, like, I'm getting a lot of work done at home right now because he's, like, invested in NBA Jam. He's, like, time is passing. And, oh, my gosh, because he's not a gamer. But he's so in flow. And he's also totally tapping into his 12-year-old self who's, like, psyched, who played it on, like, a 19-inch television screen when he was a kid, And so now he's just, like, whoa, this is the big leagues. I made it in life, right? But he's so in flow.
And that's such a great thing. Like, he can find that every day. It's obviously not his job.
No.
And maybe it would lose some of its appeal if it were his job. You know, that's part of flow, is that when you're in that activity, you're doing it not to reach a goal, you know, or for that external thing. It's more of an internal validating experience. And the more we can experience that, then obviously, you know, we are able to be more absorbed in our lives, to experience more like inner harmony, to experience more meaning in our life. And that's, you know, as a therapist, I know you talk to people about that all the time. You know, where do you find meaning?
Definitely. You know, I think it can always kind of come back to meaning. And sometimes if I see people with maybe a rise in depression or a life stage that kind of brought on some depression or some anxiety, a lot of times, you know, when we get down to those core values and who people imagine themselves to be and what they imagine their life to be, those symptoms perhaps are connected or triggered to feeling like there's a lack of meaning in their life. And again, you know, you're right, coming from a place of privilege that I was able to cultivate through resources and support a career path that has a lot of meaning. But that doesn't mean we can't find meaning in all these other places. And if I only found my meaning through my career, that would not be good either, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important for every human to have all these areas that bring meaning, whether it's knitting, right? Flow, and then giving.
I love knitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then sharing that with someone you love, like giving them something, right? Or, you know, a lot of people find meaning in how they take care of their homes or their apartment or their own space, and other people through like self-development or journaling. And, you know, also flow for me is really in relationship, right? Like if I am with a person and the time passes and I'm like, whoa, I could be with them for 5 more hours and it's already been a huge chunk of time. Like that's a big signal to me too, about like who we should keep close to us as well. I know when you sit down with your girlfriends and you haven't seen them in like 3 months and suddenly y'all paid the check like 5 hours ago, but nobody has moved and everybody has to pee. You're all in flow together, which I think is pretty significant.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can find meaning like no matter what, you know, Viktor Frankl is part of this discussion too. And you know, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning after experiencing life in a concentration camp in World War II. And, you know, he wrote that book to point out that folks who understood they can control their thoughts, regardless of their circumstances, were the ones who survived. Yeah. And so, I mean, this is more than just, you know, having fun at a video game. It's if we can wire ourselves to really see the positives, to experience those states of positive emotion, that really does help us in all domains of our life. Mm-hmm. It can help us not just survive, but then even thrive. So this is definitely not a new concept.
No. And, you know, let's transition and talk for a second about so Jeannie and I, y'all, have recently watched the Netflix documentary Stutz about the psychotherapist Phil Stutz. And he, you know, it was created by Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill's his client. And besides, at least for me, I feel like it was a very beautiful documentary and very meaningful. Stutz uses a lot of positive psychology type tools and how he supports his clients. A lot of focusing on love and gratitude and really looking at, you know, flow. He calls it life force, and it's not exactly the same, but even the concept of life force, where if someone is saying, you know, I know what I'm supposed to be doing, I know I'm depressed, I know what's going to get me out of it, but I can't even get there. Like, what can I do? And he encourages people to activate their life force, and that it can guide you when you're lost and help you find your passion, maybe find more flow. And if you want to imagine it, the life force is kind of like a pyramid, like at the bottom, focusing on your relationship with your body. So looking at how you can move more, maybe eat in a way that supports your system, work on your sleep, and then working up towards your relationship with people. If you're connected, if you're co-regulating, you know, what are those relationships like? And then lastly, working on your relationship with yourself. And, you know, Stutz really believes in journaling to do that, that we tap into an unconscious part of ourself, and we get to know ourselves in a different way when we're writing or journaling. But that can, you know, someone's journaling may be, you know, running, someone's journaling may be knitting. And, you know, really kind of utilizing, like, when you can tap into these three channels of your body, your relationships, and yourself, that can really alleviate a lot of those symptoms and get you back into a state of being able to feel confident in pursuing your passion. Mm-hmm. What all did you think about that?
I thought it was really interesting. I mean, I, of course, am drawn to exploring the therapeutic relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as somebody who's been on a couch for years and on the other side as well. And I, you know, at first I was like, okay, so this guy just tells people what to do.
I was wondering what you thought about that. I mean, I have opinions about that as well.
I do too. I mean, it's very solution focused, right? It's not necessarily my way. I mean, personally, my loved ones can absolutely attest to this. If you tell me what to do, I'm going to do the opposite. I have the counter will and I have it very strong. So that doesn't really work for me. I don't want someone to just tell me what to do. I find this in therapy as well, that, you know, sometimes we have to get there ourselves in order for the change to be meaningful and lasting. So rather than if someone tells me, here's what's wrong with you, here's how you fix it, I'm less inclined to believe them. I am one of those people who I like to get there myself, and then I will make the changes. So that's not exactly my style, but I like the tools. I mean, I definitely see how his approach appeals to people. I think the tools are very similar to what you and I both use. It's very cognitive, behavioral. Yeah. It's a lot of imagery. It's meditation. Every tool he introduced started with close your eyes. Okay. So basically we're doing a guided meditation.
Yeah.
You know, so I did really like that. I liked his grateful flow. Speaking of flow, that just, you know, where you basically find, you know, start naming the things that you're grateful for, and then stop and just feel the sensation of what it feels like to experience gratitude, to be in that essential flow state, a positive flow state. Mm-hmm. I like that. I liked the love one. I don't remember what he called it, but, you know, basically energetically envisioning like your love as a force and giving it to the person across from you. And, you know, it's very Jungian. It's very collective consciousness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that appeals to me as somebody who really leans on the philosophy of yoga for my therapeutic lens.
Jason put it on while I was cooking, and I kept like stop cooking every 5 minutes, running across, like, we have an open concept space, but I'd run and I'd also tell him something like I was a third participant in this documentary, like, but I do this and I da, 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 da. And so it's like, pause, watch for 5 minutes. Jess has something to say. Pause, watch. But he hasn't even finished it yet because I interrupted him so many times. But so I was interested what you thought about his neutrality, like his lack of neutrality, because I have an opinion with the people I work with, not always, but sometimes I get to the point with some of my clients where they're like, well, I want to know what you think about this. And I don't want to be that neutral force, he expresses that he does have a dog in the fight, right? Like he cares. And I look at the relationship between the two. And at times I'm like, I don't know, there's a little boundaries. Boundary crossing and enmeshment happening here a little bit. And yet, some of the best information I feel like I got when I was on the couch was when I would say to my therapist, like, okay, I care what you think about this. Can you, and there's some permission giving, right? Like my clients know that if they really want my advice, like ask for my advice and let's set that clear boundary that I'm not telling you what to do, but based on my clinical judgment and my life experience, when what I've learned from other clients in the world and what I like, let's all mush it up and I'll tell you what I think maybe. And does that resonate for you? Or is there anything about that? And I was just recently listening to a podcast episode with Dr. Yalom, and he also talked about how the self-disclosure in the relationship can just, can be really healing. And so for some parts, in a way, I did think that, oh, wow, look at the relationship these two have. And that was fascinating to me. Like, that's how we heal is through relationship. But I'm glad he had the tools, and you're right, he did advise everyone to kind of close their eyes all the time. And I thought his language was really accessible. Mm-hmm. He wasn't sitting on some expert, tall mountain, he was right there with you, kind of using everyday language to kind of explain, maybe what he thinks can help.
Right. I thought it was powerful. I went in, he does have some books and I thought, oh, I could read those books. But I think that's a whole other topic, a whole other podcast.
I know.
Is it appropriate for a therapist?
A side path
for a therapist to tell the patient, he calls them patients, I love you.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
To hear that from his patient, right? Ooh, are we then in a therapeutic relationship?
Yeah.
So
yeah, that was a cringe moment for me for sure. So our disclaimer here, folks, is that we took some interesting parts from it, and yet we would probably, from a trauma-informed lens especially, maybe be doing some of these other parts, things he did differently. I agree.
Right. Yeah. No, I thought it was a really interesting documentary. And the more that we can talk about and normalize mental health struggles, yes, and the pursuit of therapy, the better. I applaud Jonah Hill for his vulnerability in making that movie.
Yeah, I was really grateful that they did. And yeah, again, it's another thing to talk about, that maybe people are watching it together and then are inspired to kind of talk about it or seek out someone like Phil Stutz. Like, go for it. Find your Phil. Like, that would be great.
Find your Phil. We don't have any Phils at Insight, but we have lots of wonderful therapists.
We have lots of metaphorical Phils. Yes, exactly.
Right. And I do like, I like that the tools are pretty simple and you can do it yourself.
Yes.
Again, when we're talking about positive psychology, I feel like people lean in right away and think, oh, it's self-help. It's just you trying to make money off me because you're selling me a book. But it speaks to that this is accessible stuff, and if you do have significant trauma or mental health issues, this is best done with a therapist.
Yes.
But there are lots of tools that you can use to kind of pulse that positive emotion every day get into that state of flow. There's so many opportunities that don't cost any money to get into a state of flow.
I agree. Totally. Well, what a lovely conversation it's been.
It has been. Thanks, Jess.
Yeah, thank you. So last thing, what are some of your, do you have any favorite positive psychology, like books or anything like that, that people can look up, or what sticks out to you in your mind that maybe if someone's interested in positive psych that they could pursue?
One of my favorites, and I will, you know, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi wrote a wonderful book, and it's very academic, but honestly, it is a difficult read. It's not super easy. If that's your jam, I encourage you to go for it. But one of my books that we use in one of the trainings that I present for YogaFit is called Authentic Happiness by Sean Acor, and I can put that in the show notes. And it's, you know, it's really more, I think, geared toward folks like in the business world. But Sean Acor, he's written a couple books. One is Before Happiness. And it's really all just all about what tools can we use that we all have to just be a little bit happier every day. And he's got a really great TED Talk as well, too.
Ooh, I love those.
Yeah. And one more. It would be Dan Harris, 10% Happier. I'm sure I've talked about it.
I was just trying to Google that one. I was like, I know that there was one more you've referenced before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's got a wonderful, like, sardonic approach to meditation. And it's hard to argue that, you know, if you take 10 minutes a day to meditate, you might be 10% happier in your life. And that ain't a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and for my end, I didn't read this, but my partner Jason did. He really liked The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin. Sure. He felt like, you know, nothing. He's like, I've heard it before. You know, these are all things I've heard before, but he still just enjoyed having like another lens, another narrative, another person telling the story and being able to maybe think about it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Jeannie.
Yeah. Thanks, Jess. And, you know, go out there and get in your flow state, and it'll be summer soon.
It will be. It totally will. All right. Well, you take care. And thank you, everyone, for listening. See you next time.
Thank you again for joining us on Insight Mind Body Talk, a body-centered mental health podcast.
We hope today's episode was empowering and supported you in strengthening your mind-body connection.
We're your hosts, Jeannie
and Jess.
Please join us again as we continue to explore integrative approaches to well-being.
Until then, take care.